Welcome to Holden Village. Today is the 27th of July, 1995, in the Creekside Room this morning. Our speaker is Kathy Bosch, and she will be doing a session entitled Because You Love Your Child, Tools for Parenting Part 1. So, let's listen in on Kathy.
I'm a family life educator, and I've been a parent educator really for over 35 years, even before I had children, which made me a little bit suspect of some of the people I worked with at the time. And I can remember being very distressed doing a workshop one time, and after finishing like 6 weeks and doing an evaluation, someone said, "Now I just wonder if you're going to do what you say when you have children." Oh, that was deflating. But I think much of the time we began to think about being parents sort of like this zebra, and with our stripes falling off, I think it must be stress that parenting is not the easiest. It's a marvelous job, but it's not the easiest job in the world. And I think here's this marvelous cartoon by Arlo and Janice. And Janice is saying to her son, Brad, "What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you lately? You have to argue with everything I say. You make parenting very difficult." And Brad says, "Childing isn't so hot either." We need to think of it both ways. I'd sort of like to begin with this statement. I have no idea where it's come from. That's not identified, but as a kind of laying the foundation of where we're going to go, because you love your child, tools for parenting. I have come to a frightening conclusion. I am a decisive element in the family. It is my personal approach that creates the climate. It is my daily mood that makes the weather. I possess tremendous power to make another's life miserable or joyous. I can be a tool of torture or an instrument of inspiration. I can humiliate or humor, hurt or heal. In all situations, it is my response that decides whether a crisis will be escalated or de-escalated and somebody humanized or dehumanized. Now, that's a pretty heavy thing when we think about parenting, being the first teachers of our child. And here's something from Calvin and Hobbes to lighten it a little bit. Calvin is saying to his father, "You say when you become a father, you get a book that explains everything in the world?" Dad says, "Right." Calvin says, "Can I see it?" Dad says, "Nope, sorry." Calvin says, "Why not?" Dad says, "It tells what it's like to raise a kid." "So?" Dad says, "You're not allowed to know that until it's too late not to have one." And I think that's true. You know, we don't really realize what our responsibilities are to humiliate or humanize, to hurt or heal, until it's almost too late and we've done it. There's a couple of books I'd like to share. Westerhoff has done a neat one, "Will Our Children Have Faith?" And a couple of years ago, I went to a conference in St. Louis that was sponsored by both the ELCA and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, with funding, I believe, from AAL, Aid Association for Lutherans, on the topic of will our children have faith. And the church, under a three-year grant from AAL, the churches under a three-year grant from AAL, were working on what they called DSCAR, Dedicated Early Support for Children at Risk, DSCAR. I think the anachronism, is that what I want to call it?
Acronym
is very important. You know, how do we DSCAR, or remove the scars from children? Dedicated Early Support for Children at Risk. And in a sense, all our children, even from the happiest families, are at risk, because it's a crazy world out there. Now, how do we prepare our children for the bumps and the knocks and the scrapes when they're outside the family? And will our children have faith? How do we help them to recognize that there is something more in life than cartoons and videos and electronic games and material things? Will our children have faith? A couple of other good books that are in the bookstore. You Are Your Child's First Teacher by Baldwin. What can parents do with and for their children from birth to age six that will enhance their development without negative effects at a later age? So that's a reminder that we do have responsibilities. Kids Are Worth It by Barbara Coloroso, giving your child the gift of inner discipline. Barbara is a family, a parent educator from Colorado. Barbara Coloroso, Coloroso. And she's from Colorado, but she is very well known in Ontario, where we come from. And she is probably there every other month doing a workshop or series of workshops in some place or other. She does a workshop in Waterloo Kitchener at one of the school with sponsorship from one school or another that will sell out 1,000 tickets a month before she's to speak. And she will do a two-hour presentation without a note in front of her or without stopping. And you're just, it's a lot of common sense. And you say, yeah, I know that. And instead of dusting off the corners and pulling things out that have gotten sort of settled in underneath something else, the trials and tribulations of the day. She is known very well. This book just came out this past summer, a year ago. I think it just came out in the U.S. this year. Came out in Canada a year early. And it's just come out in paperback now by Avon. And it's very well worthwhile. Her videotape, she has a videotape that is a two-hour videotape.
Same time.
Well, yeah. The title has...
It's not the same title.
It's not the same title. And why I'm blocking on it, I'll think of it in just a minute. How to Raise Your Kids Without...
Raising how to Win at Parenting without Beating Your Kids.
Thank you. How to Win at Parenting Without Beating Your Kids. And when she took the book to the publisher, she wanted to use that name. And the publisher said, I'm not so sure about that. And she said, well, let's just think about it for a little while. And within the next week, she had a telephone call from someone, a man, who said, can you tell me how to get that videotape of yours? It's called How to Win at Parenting Without Beating the Hell Out of Your Kids. And she decided, maybe we ought to call it Kids Are Worth It. And that's her company is called Kids Are Worth It. So that's very good. How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk is a classic. Now, as I said, this came out in the U.S. in 95 and Canada in 94. How to Talk So Kids Will Listen came out in 1980. Now, that date would turn a lot of people off, and I want to caution you against being turned off by it. It is still one of the more basic and more readable books about parenting that you will find anywhere. And it's basically for children ages maybe 2 to 10 or 11. But still, some of the basics are there if you even are working with teenagers. And one of the things that is very readable, because it all the steps and all the words of wisdom are also in comics. There are about 6-7 chapters, and each section has comics. It has some work sheets to work through some things, and it has some role play and some questions. The second half of every chapter is called Parent Stories, Questions and Comments in Parent Stories. And so in many ways, it's like reading somebody's diary, the experiences that other people have had and how they can fit in. So it really is a very basic kind of book, and it's very readable. I work with a parenting program through the school system in Waterloo Region, which is a countywide school system, maybe with both the public schools and the Roman Catholic school system. There are probably 300 schools in the county. And we do, this is in Ontario, southern Ontario, hour west of Toronto. This is the book that we use for parents of school-age kids. We use a different one for parents of preschoolers and one another one for parents of teenagers. But this is a basic. And there's a couple things that I sort of like to focus on today as we begin.
What is the book that we use for preschoolers?
I'll think about that in just a minute. I haven't been tuned into it. It comes out of American Guidance Association. And I'll come up with that name in a minute, too. This, for instance, would be one that would be for preschoolers. It's really from birth to age 6 as well. And this is a fairly new one that's out. This is a fairly basic book that will work with teens as well as setting a foundation for parenting. The kids are worth it from birth on up through school age. Let me just pass that around if you want. I'll pass a couple of these around if you're interested. Take a look at it, become more familiar with it. Couple of things I'd like to focus on as our beginning is to look at some of the basic tools about parenting. And one, I think, is looking at feelings. How do we help our children understand feelings? How do we understand our own feelings? How do we understand the anger that we deal with? How do we understand the disappointment, the sadness? How do we be able to accept the feelings that we have and recognize that all feelings are okay? Feelings aren't right or wrong. It's not okay just to be happy and bad to be sad. It may be very appropriate at times to be very sad if you've lost something or someone. Or there's a great disappointment. It might seem very inappropriate to be dancing and, you know, when somebody close to you has died. The only one I think that's been appropriate for, do you remember an old Mary Tyler Moore television program when Chuckles the Clown died?
Oh, wow.
And they were having, there was an accident and he died and he had been a good friend of Mary's and they went to the memorial service and everybody was dressed in black and they're all sitting there and the preacher is going on very somberly and Mary starts to go she bursts out laughing and she covers it up when everybody looks at her and she does this about 3 times and feeling very embarrassed about it, and finally the preacher says, you know, you're right, Chuckle's life was to make us happy and here we are being very somber and sad, and I think we ought to share stories about that. And then but that's a very unusual situation. You must admit we don't often fit into that. But all feelings are okay. They're not right or wrong. What becomes judgeable about feelings is how we act on them, what we do with them. If I become angry at you and start punching you in the nose and kicking you and calling you all sorts of nasty names, I might be judged like not a very nice person. If I'm angry at you and I say, I'm angry because of what you said about me, and I'm so angry I can't deal with it right now, I want to talk to you later, and I'm going to have to take a walk. Well, it might be a little bit better when we finally do get together and can talk about what went on. So we have some choices about our actions. And so if we can help children to feel that all feelings are okay, and that how we act on them, that because they're mad at somebody, they don't have to start calling them names and tell nasty stories about them. They can say to the other person, I'm mad because you called me a name, or because you put me down, or because you won't let me play with you. And so, in a sense, we want to develop a kind of assertiveness. We certainly want to develop what we call an IELAC feeling in children. And that's that they are lovable and capable. And we need to develop that within ourselves as well, that we are lovable and capable, because children learn about their self-esteem, about who they are, by hearing what we tell them about themselves. Now, as we become adults, we can tell ourselves some other things and fill in the gap. But as children, welcome.
Can we borrow a couple of chairs?
Sure. But as children, we hear and respond to what other people say to us. And that's where we get information about our world. So we need to be able to be models to our children and to remind them that we are, as children of God, lovable and capable, that God is forgiving, and that we may do some things that we may have acted on our feelings in ways that are not helpful to ourselves or others, but we do have a loving and forgiving God that can help us to see what was not so helpful and to find another way of dealing with things. So looking at feelings, let me take an example. What if you gave your child a birthday party? You went all out. You were only going to invite 3 or 4 friends, and you ended up inviting 15. And you've just bent whatever that age of the child was from 1 on up to 18. You spent more money on the birthday party than you planned. You had more kids around than you planned. You spent more energy on it than you planned. And you're just exhausted. The party is over. And your child comes up to you and says, "That's a dumb party. That was a dumb party." What are you going to respond? What would you say? What do you think somebody else would say? You have a friend who?
"You ungrateful kid, I spent all this time."
Okay, you ungrateful.
That's all you have over yourself at that point.
Yeah, well, what might be some of the things? What would you say?
"Forget it, I'm not going to do that again."
"Forget it, that's the last birthday party I'm going to do for you." What else? Ungrateful.
"Too bad, you're
going to
have it anyhow."
"Too bad, it's over with, and that's all you're getting. There's nothing else." So we take it, in a sense, very personally, don't we? You know, "That's the last party I'll give for you. You're ungrateful. Forget it, I'm not going to do." And so we take it very personally. But now let's go over to the other side. What do you think that might be going on in the child's mind? Why might the child have said, "That was a dumb party"? What do you think might have happened?
"It may not have been age appropriate."
"It may not have been age appropriate."
"So it may not have been what the kid wanted or expected."
Okay.
"He didn't choose."
"The child may not have chosen."
"Part of choosing what to do."
"It wasn't what the child really wanted for the party." What else might have happened?
His friends,
quite likely the friends didn't have fun, or the kids said something. "Dumb, I was at a better, but my birthday party was better," or "Is that all we're going to get?" or "Is that all we're going to do?" What else might have happened? It's over. Another whole year before another party like this comes, and you're a special person. What happens when that happens? It's a real letdown. Might be too tired out, exhausted, doesn't really know what they're saying. What if they really, maybe there was a kid that says, "Oh, I'm going to get you," when they're planning to go to the birthday party, "I'm going to get you such and such," you know, something, whatever is appropriate and publicized, you know, highly marketed for that age child. And then, maybe because the kid didn't have enough money, or the parent went out and got it, or because the kid got mad at the birthday kid, ends up bringing him a box of old colors, crayons. And you were looking forward to this magic thing, and you get a dumb thing. So there could be a lot of reasons. Now, any of the reasons that we talked about over here from the child's side point to how dumb the mother or parent was in giving the party? They're all very personal reasons for the kid. What went on, or what the kids may have said, what the gifts they may have gotten, or maybe because it's all over with, or because the kid wanted to win one of the games that they were playing, and mom said, no, that's your guests have to be the winners. You know, it could be anything that just sort of missed. But we end up taking it very personally. "That's the last time I'm going to do it for you, you ungrateful kid." So what we want to help our children become aware of, and also for us to become aware of, is that sometimes we can put out the shield in front of us And when somebody says something nasty to me, I don't have to let it hit me and go inside. I can make that shield and let it bounce off and fall on the floor and say, boy, something disappointed you, to the child. And let them, and recognize that they may have some reasons for whatever caused them to say what they did. Instead of saying, don't you dare say that. I spent all this time and all this money and you say it's a stupid, dumb birthday party. Don't you ever dare tell me that again. So sometimes we tend to deny children's feelings. Oh, you really don't feel that way. Or you're just tired. Or the birthday party's over. You'll feel better about it after a while, but it's a disappointment that it's over with. So we tend to deny children's feelings instead of letting them, accepting the feelings and letting them deal with them, recognizing. So as we work through feelings, I'd like to have us, there's a bit about communication in that as well, and I'd like to have us do a little bit of exercise here, 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, okay. If you can just pair up with another person and then find a little space somewhere in the room that you can stand with each other. We'll do just a couple of minutes of exercise. So leave whatever you have on your chair, and then we'll come back in a couple of minutes. Somebody wants to sit? Is it? Okay. And I'll take the odd person until Paul comes back. So pull your chairs up. Except the others, right now, the others I want you to stand. And you want to be my partner for right now? Okay. And first of all, get to know who your partner is. Hi.
Lori.
Nice to meet you. Where are you from?
Seattle.
Do you have children?
One. How old? She's 23 months.
Oh, marvelous. Great. Okay. We have two. One is 30, who's just become a mother, and one is 33, who's not a mother at this time. Okay. Now I want you to do an exercise where you stand back to back with your partner. So maybe what you might do is just pull your chair around behind and go back to back. And I want you to tell your partner some delightful experience that you've had thus far here at Holden Village. And I'm only going to give you about 30 seconds to talk with your partner. And first of all, let's see, whoever is closest to Holden is going to be the A person, and who lives the farthest away from Holden will be the B person. So find out who's A and B, who goes first?
Okay, you're A.
So A, start first and tell this delightful story about being here at Holden. Now, it's going to be a very quick one. I'll cut you off in about 30 seconds. Okay, switch.
Okay.
My brother and his wife and my sister and her husband were both up here the first 3 days and came up on Saturday, and they left on Tuesday. And we took a hike to 10 Mile Falls on the new path, which is marvelous. It is just, you know, you could take a wheelchair there. And my brother, who doesn't like to do a lot of this kind of hiking stuff, really enjoyed it even. Okay, stop. Now, you've been telling a happy story. How did it feel to communicate this way?
Odd.
Odd, okay, you're back to back. Does that ever happen in communication in the family and at home? Maybe not literally back to back, but what might be similar?
Like someone's not listening to you when you talk.
They're what?
You're not meeting.
You're not meeting. You may be talking, somebody's not listening. You're in other rooms. How many of you have ever yelled from one room to somebody in another room, what do you want me to do with this? You know, what's this? Or where did you put that? You know, what's that?
My husband is here right now.
You know, we have no idea what they're even talking about.
No eye contact.
No eye contact. Okay, let's turn around. We want to find a meeting way, so let's have some eye contact. And you can go on with this story or tell another, you know, another story, positive story. about your time here at Holden. And this time the B people will start first. And I want the A people to count the number of flies flying around in this room. Get the idea? Okay, so I'll start first. And for anyone who happens to be listening in on the tape, try this exercise yourself. Okay, go. How did this feel?
Wonderful.
Okay, what was helpful? What did you like better?
Feedback.
Well, now we were just doing friendly grunts, remember?
Recognition.
That there was some recognition.
Connection.
You had a connection, you had attention. You know that they were listening, they weren't thinking, what do I have to remember about that hike we're going on tomorrow or pack everything? Because there was some comment. Did you want to jump in and say, yeah, and tell us, add on to the story or ask a question? That's the kind of thing that often happens to us. We want to find out some more information. Okay, let's you can go back to your places. Thank you for your willingness to do this. So we want attention. We want to know that the other person is respecting and giving ear to whatever we're saying. And that friendly grunts can help fill in. It doesn't take over the story, but there's still something that's a little bit missing there. We want to know whether they really understand what I've been telling them. Now, when we tell happy stories and such like that, it's not really quite so serious. But when we're going to tell something that may be a problem or a bother to us, particularly it's a problem that I may have with you, we need to know whether the other person is really understanding me and not off interpreting it in another way. So we want to look at feelings. What's the feeling behind what I'm saying? So we want to listen for feelings. There's an exercise in How to Talk So Kids Will Listen to help. And the first chapter is on helping children deal with feelings. And some of the reminders that Faber and Maeslisch come up with is to listen with full attention. And we found that in this last exercise, that was very helpful, to listen with full attention. To acknowledge with a word, what I call friendly grunts. Mm-hmm, oh, and you know that somebody's still listening to you. The third reminder is to give feelings a name. Okay, how can we give feelings a name? Let's do an exercise. If your child came home and said, the teacher, the bus driver, daddy, mommy, grandpa, grandma, whoever, the neighbor next door, someone yelled at me in front of all my friends and everybody laughed. What do you think the child is feeling?
Embarrassment.
Embarrassment. Okay. So if we want to connect and check out what the child is telling us, how could we do that? By connecting with that feeling that we have, boy, you must have really been embarrassed when somebody called you a name. Then if the kid wants to correct or confirm it, they can say, oh, I wasn't embarrassed, it was just, I got angry. Well, sometimes embarrassment can be that feeling underneath anger. It's just that it broke up our game. It might have been something else, but most likely it was probably that he was very embarrassed. But when we can respond with that feeling and check it out, it at least tells the other child, it tells back to the child that the parent has heard what I've said. The parent knows what I felt. What if the parent would have responded instead and said, well, you can take people laughing at you. What's the big deal? What's wrong with people laughing? Or what if the parent said, well, what did you do that made them yell at you? Why did they call you a name? Or why did they yell at you? What did you do? How would you feel?
Worse.
They're not listening to me. They're not knowing what's important to me and that I need to feel okay. So let's try a couple of others. What if you have a child, a school-age child, that says, Tommy invited me to a birthday party, but I don't know if I really want to go.
Everybody else was gone.
Okay. So, and if I, as the parent, say, well, isn't that great? You got invited to a party. Of course you're going to go. Who would want to miss a birthday party? How would you feel?
Pressured.
Not heard. Not listened to.
Pressured. Not listened to. Not heard.
You can't even tell your mother how you really feel.
Yeah, and then when they get to be teenagers and we wonder why they're not talking to us. Yeah. So, what could we say instead? What do you think? What were some of those feelings we thought that the child might have about the invitation to the birthday party? Afraid, unsure, insecure.
Not listened to.
Okay. So, how could we say back to the child something about the feelings and something about what the feelings are about? So, what we want to do is to give some feedback. And we could call that feedback. Some people call it active listening. Some people call it reflective listening. Some people call it paraphrasing. Saying back in your own words what you heard the other person say. And this isn't just parent-child. This can be adult-adult, professional-professional, child-to-child. I often hear responses from parents after we do this session that some weeks later they're beginning to hear the kids and listen to them. You're not feeling very good about that, are you, Mom? You're really irritated that such and such didn't get done when it was, and all of a sudden the parents are saying, yeah, they heard me. So we want to give some feedback. And feedback includes reflection of a feeling or feelings that you think the child, that you hear from that child's voice, and the content. What are those feelings about? What's going on? You sound a little bit unsure about accepting that birthday party invitation. You're not sure that that's a party you want to go with. Is that what you're saying? You know, sometimes we can ask that as a kind of question. Instead of saying, well, why don't you want to go? Can you remember back to when you were a child, a teenager, whatever, when somebody asked you a question, why, how did you generally respond?
I don't know.
Yeah. Or what else? There's usually about three basic responses.
Because?
I don't know because, and the other's a nonverbal one.
You got them all.
So we ought to learn from early on when a child is one, they're trying to figure out who they are, and they're basically, they almost identify with the parent. Whoever is that constant caregiver, that's who they identify with. When they become two, they become I am me, me, mine. When they become three, their favorite question is, why? And also probably no and mine. And when they're teenagers, they say, why no mine? Go back over it again.
You don't know anything.
That's right. So we ought to learn, children ask us a lot of why questions, and that's important. And sometimes we get very tired of hearing any more why questions, and sometimes you might say, okay, you've got two more whys to ask me, and then I go off on break, taking a little holiday. Or it's also helpful when they're asking a lot of whys to say, what do you think about it? And get an idea of what's going on in their head, their interpretation. I remember someone telling the story about grandfather, and it might have been in a situation like this. The grandfather was a geologist, and he took a grandson out fishing for the first time. The grandson was about 5 or 6, and the grandfather asked the grandson, how do you suppose this lake was made? And the grandson said, I don't know. So the grandfather then proceeded to talk about glaciers and how things were moved around and how things piled up and things got scooped out and water filled in, and that's how lakes gave the whole kind of scientific explanation. And then wanted to check back with the grandson to see if he understood. And the grandson finally said, well, I heard that there was a giant who walked along, and every place that his feet went down, that's where a lake went. So sometimes it's helpful to get an idea of what ideas children have in their heads, and that you're going to have to work with. And so it was helpful to Grandpa to be able to understand that there's some other stories that are going on in his grandson's head, too, along with the content that he gave. So we can always ask children, what do you think? And that thinking, you know, thinking is one of those important things that we want to encourage. I mean, it's a very obvious thing. We want our kids to be thinkers, to think through, to figure out, to get an idea. But that's probably one of the last things that we ever put into a lesson plan as a parent. And it would be very easy, you know, whatever the age, you know, once they gain verbal ability, to ask them, what do you think? Or they make a comment to just say, that's good thinking. Good idea. You really thought through that. To give them that encouragement for thinking as well as other things that they do. Yeah, and we want to say, I'm glad you did think of that. Yeah. That's, you certainly can if we listen long enough. And if we encourage that continuing conversation, and we'll give them a chance, let them know that we really do hear what they're saying by checking back on the feelings and the content. So what's another kind of statement that a child will make?
Can I just ask, the party thing then, when the child comes home and says, I don't know if I really want to go to that party, then you're not going to get a really good response if you just say, well, why don't you want to go? Mm-hmm. Would it be better to say something like, what do you think is going to happen?
That would be a good response that would allow the child to tell you some more. Rather than making a statement, well, you ought to go, that's your friend. Your friend wouldn't be, you'll lose friends or you'll never gain friends if you don't go to their parties or whatever.
But it sounds like from what you're saying and what I remember, even if you don't come back defensively like that, if you're trying to help but you just say why, you're not going to get.
Because maybe they don't really know why at the time, or they're not quite sure that you're going to accept the why. Or that it's right, correct? So so instead of asking the question why, to make sure that you first understand the statement that the child has made, you sound a little bit unsure about whether you want to go to that party. And he may say, well, Dad said something about maybe going fishing, or maybe the child will say, well, Grandma said she might help me do such and such. I mean, maybe there's something else that was somewhat planned for that time, but not definite. I mean, there may be a variety of reasons that the child is unsure.
Maybe his friend and him had words not too long over something. They're not getting along as well as...
That's right. So instead of saying, well, you should go, or making a definite statement, or asking why, which often is a defensive, you got to protect yourself, am I going to say the right thing? So we can learn that most often whenever we ask the question why, we don't get a lot of information. So instead of wasting your energy and getting frustrated at the response, it's better not to even ask it. We can tune in first to check out what, if we really understand what they said, by asking, or by reflecting the feeling that we think we hear in that voice, and by connecting that feeling to whatever that's about. You know, you're unsure about going to the party. You were embarrassed because they laughed at you. let's, what's another one? About the birthday party, when the kid said that was a dumb party, instead of responding with, you know, my own defensiveness, that's the last time I'm ever going to give you a party. How do we turn around instead and try to figure out what's happening with the child, what went on? So when a child says, that was a dumb party, what do you think the child was really feeling?
I didn't get enough presents.
Okay, disappointed.
Yeah.
Okay, any other feeling that might have come with that statement?
Let down.
Let down. Okay, that's certainly a possibility, and that's a good midpoint. But you might want it. You might want to let the child know that you really hear that there's a feeling in there. If you really identify with the feeling, if somebody comes in stomping away and just, you know, the body language is so obvious that something is wrong, and they're just spouting off non-understandable words, and you say back to them, you're upset? You know, it's, you're going...
What can I do to make you see I am upset?
Yeah, you're not getting, it's obvious that you haven't really heard, saw, understood what's going on with me. If I'm just stamping around and you say, you're upset? You might try to match that kind of feeling, saying something's really bothering you. Well, yeah. And then you might get something. You might get it out. I mean, sort of like pulling that plug out a little bit so they can...
Are you recommending stomping around yourself?
No, but that your voice might say, and that the emotion you choose matches what you see. I mean, bothered. I mean, if he's stamping around and he's really sputtering, it's more than bothered. You're really upset, so you choose that feeling that may be more at an appropriate matching level of what you see happening with that person.
Your response to the dumb party might be something like, when he said that was a dumb party, if you would say, ask a question, what was dumb about it?
You could
help to get some more information.
Sure, you might want. I personally feel it's helpful if you can connect with that person's feelings, and to say you were really disappointed about something in that party, or something didn't go the way you wanted it to. You gave out a feeling word. You're really let down that the party's all over. And the child may say, no, I'm not let down, but Dan said, this is stupid, dumb games. Oh, somebody wasn't happy with what we're doing, and that sort of blows it all for you. Well, yeah. So, what do you... I'm not even sure that it needs an apology from you, because you're dealing with his feelings and you want to help him to say, well, that's really distressing, or that's really bummer when you think you're having some fun, and then maybe it was, what do you suppose he was feeling, or what do you suppose he didn't like? So you could find, you really want to get some more information. And it's, you know, maybe there's 10 kids there, and there's one person who says, this is dumb, and all of a sudden, it's dumb for everyone in that one child's eye. There was a marvelous little cartoon. Do you see the cartoon For Better, For Worse by Lynn Johnston in your comics? It's usually about the family. And she's great. Mom does a French braid for Lizzie going off to school, and Lizzie's about junior high. And Mom says, gee, that looks nice. She gets on the bus, and the bus driver says, hey, Lizzie, I like your new hair braid. Your mom really spent some time with it. And she smiles, and she sits down by her friend, and her friend says, hey, that looks great. And she goes into her class, and her homeroom teacher says, "Oh, Lizzie, you've got your hair braided in a French braid. That really looks neat." And Lizzie's all smiles at this time, and she goes off to a class, and one little boy comes behind her and says, "What do you call that dumb thing around your head?" And she heads straight for the bathroom. She takes all the braids down. She comes home at the end of school, and Mom says, "What happened to your braid?" And Lizzie says, "Nobody liked it." So, you know, be aware of how sometimes one statement can influence and override other positive things. It happens with us as adults.
Why do we always grab onto the negative so readily and let the good things pass over?
That's right.
Human nature.
I think we're feeling pretty weak with our self-esteem, and our IALAC tag, I'm lovable and capable tag, has been crumpled or torn to pieces, and it's just a shred.
You go back and say, "Well, I'm sorry you don't like it, but all these other people sure did, and I do too."
Yeah, so in a sense, we have to find a way to help teach our children some assertiveness skills, and that means we have to learn and use some assertiveness skills. Not aggressive. Not, "Well, who do you think made you king of the mountain?" I mean, if we start to put fire back or extra logs on the fire, it'll just burn brighter. And so to say, "Well, I'm sorry you didn't like it, I did." That's disappointing. Maybe you'll like the birthday cake. I mean, can you think of some positive? And maybe it's green envy. Maybe it's jealousy on this other child's part. But we can't go and fix the other child. I mean, we can't go put Band-Aids on every one of them. But we can help our child come to terms with that not everybody's going to like what you like. And it's okay if somebody says, "I don't like that." And you can say, "Okay, that's okay. You don't have to wear it. I like it." How many of you wore glasses when you were a kid in school? Did you get a bad time from some kids about four eyes or, "Look, you got glasses," and all this kind of stuff? Do you have children who might likely wear glasses when they go to school? So when they go and get the glasses and are prepared to begin to wear them, how can you help them be ready for some of the negative things? Remember one mother saying she had two daughters, and they each started to wear glasses when they came to about second grade. And the older one really had a difficult time because nobody else in her class wore glasses, and they called her four eyes, and she just felt terrible, and she didn't want to wear her glasses, and she really needed to. And so it took a long while to work through that. A couple of years later, when the next one was ready to wear glasses, Mom was a little bit more prepared, and she asked her daughter if there was a friend or two that she wanted to take along with her to help pick out the glasses. Wise mom. So the friends got together, and they all decided on what glasses they liked, so that if somebody said something about the glasses, there were two other people who said, "Hey, she looks great in those." And she also helped the daughters say, "Now there are going to be people who are going to make comments about glasses. And, you know, what do you think you could say back?" And her friends also helped her. I mean, the friends were around when Mom said this. The friends also helped her to come up with some good, what you might call, Ann Lander responses. And when they laughed about her glasses, she'd say, one daughter began to say, "Well, they're fine because I can take them off and then I don't have to see you, or I can't see you very clearly." Which really shocked, wasn't really a put down. But, I mean, it was, I don't see you. Then I don't have to look at you because I can't see you. Really shocked the kid who thought they were tormenting, and it stopped right there. Nobody else did any more put-downs because they were unprepared for a feedback, a response back. So, in this listening skills, we've got just a couple of minutes so we can go. I've got just a couple of things that I want to bring in. If we can really tune into listening skills, and when there is a hurt or a real, you know, it can be excitement, it can be enthusiasm. It doesn't have to be just the feelings that are uncomfortable. Remember, they're not right or wrong, but they may be less comfortable or more comfortable the way we approach them. To listen, to feedback that feeling and what we think that feeling is about, reflective listening, paraphrasing, active listening, feedback, whatever you want to call it, check it out. That's basically what it is. It's checking it out. Do I really, what I heard, is that really what my child wanted me to hear? And what it does for the child, it says, or the other adult, your partner, your friend, your coworker, your parent, works very well on adult parents, to say, they heard what I said. Or if they didn't, at least I have a chance to correct it. And then we can stay on the right path rather than each going off. It's not asking questions. It's checking out if what I heard. It's not asking for some more information first. It's checking out that what I heard.
It's evidence that you have been listened to.
That you have been listened to. Yeah. And I think one of my favorite cartoons is this, The Born Loser, where the boss, the pompous boss, says to the loser, join me for a bit of one-on-one basketball at the club. And the loser says, you're on. And the boss leaves and then says, see you at noon. Oh, and don't forget, we're rubber sole sneakers only. It's the rule. Now, we need to check out sometimes what the rules are, because here's the born loser going to play basketball. And he's saying, weird rule. All he's got on are rubber sole sneakers. Because the boss said, we're rubber sole sneakers only. It's the rule. It's important to check out what they're saying sometime. And then there's Irma Bombeck. Do you know who Irma Bombeck is? She's usually got a focus on life with tongue in cheek. She says, treat friends and kids the same. She says, on TV the other day, a leading child psychologist said parents should treat their children as they would treat their best friend, with courtesy, dignity, and diplomacy. And Irma says, I've never treated my children any other way, I told myself. But later that night, I thought about it. Did I really talk to my best friends like I talked to my children? Just suppose our good friends Fred and Eleanor came to dinner one night and... It's about time you two got here. What have you been doing? Dawdling? And leave those shoes outside, Fred. They've got mud on them. And shut the door. Were you born in a barn? So, Eleanor, how have you been? I've been meaning to have you over for such a long time. Fred, take it easy on that chip dip or you'll ruin your dinner. I didn't slave over a hot stove all day long to have you nibble like some bird. Heard from any of the gang lately? Got a card from the Martins. Yes, they're in Lauderdale again. They go every year to the same spot. What's the matter with you, Fred? You're fidgeting. Of course you have to go. Look at all that punch you just drunk. It's down the hall, first door on the right. And I don't want to see a towel in the middle of the floor when you've finished and flush. Did you wash your face before you came, Eleanor? I see a dark spot. Oh, I guess it's a shadow. So how are the children? If you ask me, I think summer school is great for them. Is everybody hungry? Then why don't we go into dinner? You all go wash up and I'll take up the food. Don't tell me your hands are clean, Eleanor. I saw you playing with the dog. Fred, you sit over there, and Eleanor, you can sit with that half glass of milk. You know you're all elbows when it comes to milk. There, now your host will say grace. Fred, I don't see any cauliflower on your plate. Have you tried it? Well, try a spoonful. If you don't like it, I won't make you finish it, but if you don't try it, you can just forget dessert. And sit up straight or your spine will grow that way. Now, what were we talking about? Oh, yes, the Gerbers. They sold their house. I mean, they took a beating, but... Eleanor, don't talk with food in your mouth. I can't understand a word you're saying. And use your napkin. At that moment in my fantasy, my son walked into the room. How nice of you to come, I said pleasantly. Now what did I do, he sighed. Comments, questions. You have a couple minutes.
Did you remember the name of that book?
100 years from now, it will not matter what kind of car I drove, what kind of house I lived in, how much I had in the bank account, or what my clothes looked like. But the world will be a better place because I was important in the life of a child.